Well, it's still No Nonsense Nutrition, and I'm still Eve Prang Plews, and my guest is still Dr. Fred Harvey. Good morning, Dr. Harvey.
Good morning.
How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Good. So, does Christmas make you tired?
Christmas does not make me tired. It energizes me.
I'm glad. Well, your kids are grown, too, so that does make a difference now that you have empty nest syndrome.
It does for sure. But you know what? Even back in the day, they energized me. It was always a blast.
Oh, good. I think, you know, the single saddest thing that can happen to anybody is to wake up on Christmas morning and not be a child.
This is true.
So I don't know what you see in your practice, Dr. Harvey, but I sure see an awful lot more people. I mean, I see people every day that walk into my office and say, I'm pooped, I'm tired, I'm beat, I'm exhausted, I just don't have the juice. My father used to say, my get up and go, got up and went. Does it happen in your practice too?
I think that if it weren't for those complaints, you and I would not be very busy.
Unfortunate, but true.
Yes, it really is a struggle, especially this time of year when we have all these extra stressors. The weather changes and gets colder. There's less light. There are so many other activities to do. It's trouble to find time to juggle everything you want to get done. And just all that stress and all those extra added activities tend to take a toll.
Well, and you know, it always surprises me when people say, are you ready for Christmas? And, you know, individuals say, well, no, I'm not ready for Christmas. It's like, I'm going to let you know right now, 53 weeks from tomorrow is going to be Christmas again. So you got 53 weeks to start getting ready for next year.
It is so true.
You know, when we look at fatigue, this definition that you discovered, Dr. Harvey, I think really says it all. That's state following a period of mental or bodily activity that's characterized by a lessened capacity or motivation for work, a reduced efficiency of accomplishment, usually accompanied by a feeling of weariness, sleepiness, irritability, loss of ambition, may also supervene when from any cause energy expenditure outstrips the restorative process and may be confined to a single organ. You know, I really tagged in on those words, energy expenditure outstrips the restorative process. We just have to understand that the whole universe is a big sine wave, and that wave above the line and below the line have to balance.
It's so true, and actually I want to be a surfer and get my board on top of the crest of that wave and keep riding that until the day I'm done. But unfortunately, we all can't do that because things intervene, and we do at times have our energy expenditures outstripping our restorative abilities. And even when we don't, there's another part of fatigue that's very interesting, and that is it's a sensation of boredom and lassitude due to the absence of stimulation, monotony, or lack of interest in one's surroundings.
I'm pooped. I just don't feel like doing it. I know I've got stuff to do, but I just don't have the juice.
Exactly. And that can even spill over into another symptom that kind of coincides with fatigue but isn't fatigue. It's sleepiness. And sleepiness is usually related to sleep deprivation. You're just not getting enough. But it could also be related to some of these medical conditions, things where your restorative abilities are not capable of outstripping, or the energy expenditures are outstripping your restoration.
Well, I just had an example of that last week in my practice, a client of mine who said that he feels lousy within 10 minutes of eating, everything that he eats, no matter what he eats, and he described several meals. And I said, well, what I wanted him to do on Friday morning was to get up and just have protein.
Right.
Just eat chicken. You know, just have protein all by himself and see if he gets tired. And he called back on Friday afternoon and said, no, it didn't make him tired. And then that points us to that condition that's halfway between diabetes and hypoglycemia, known as hyperinsulinemia.
Right.
Where the body produces too much insulin. And as a result, the blood sugar crashes. And very quickly after a meal, somebody starts yawning and they get heavy-lidded. You know, if they're falling asleep at the dinner table, we have to suspect we got a blood sugar problem.
I kind of watched that happen yesterday afternoon. A friend of mine ate a cookie and about 15 minutes later was yawning.
Bonk. Right. But, you know, when we look at that sense of boredom, that sense of overwhelm, that that place where you just are pooped and you just don't feel like doing anything. Then the first thing we're always going to look at is, did they get enough sleep? You know, I ask people all the time here on No Nonsense Nutrition to go to bed a half an hour earlier. Go to bed 15 minutes earlier. You know, find out before you go grab, you know, one of those gulps of some sort of $3, you know, hit-me-up juice that they're selling in the checkout counter at both the health food store and the grocery store.
Right.
That you just get some more sleep.
It's so effective. Actually, I was reading yesterday about how they documented the sleep deficit. It's very difficult. It's a subjective thing. How much sleep did you get? How much do you need? But it's not quite as subjective as people think. There was a study where they looked at people who were sleep deprived and compared them to people who had mild sleep deficit. So they took someone and gave them only 6 hours sleep for a week. They performed as badly on the performance tests, cognitive performance and physical performance, as someone who had complete sleep deprivation for one day, no sleep at all, and versus an hour and a half deprived sleep per day for a week. Same deficit mentally and physically. So it's really important to get that sleep.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, I see so many people that are popping pills at night to help them go to sleep. I had a client that came in and she was taking one of the brand name painkillers with PM after the name. And
right.
I said, warning, warning, red alert. Don't take anything with PM after the name. That's diphenhydramine. And diphenhydramine is a really, really nasty chemical as far as the brain. You know, I'm reading this thing in here about the Parkinson's support group. We want to protect our brains for all of our life. And diphenhydramine is certainly not a way to protect our brains.
Well, none of those chemicals really are, because they don't actually allow you to really achieve restorative sleep.
Right, you're unconscious, but you're not asleep.
Right, so you don't get that catch up in the deficit, so you really aren't actually getting a benefit from it. You think you are, and you might get some physical rest, and your body might recover, but your brain doesn't quite get there with that drug or any of those.
Well, and the thing that I want to see, and I had a new client in my practice just last week who had the constellation of gaining weight, not having restorative sleep, and her blood pressure was starting to go up. And, you know, right away, as soon as I see that combination, I have to suspect sleep apnea.
Yes.
OSA, obstructive sleep apnea, where the tissue in the back of your throat gets kind of saggy and sloppy. You know, everything's heads to the center of the earth as we age.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a little bit of sag and bag, and that little bit of sag and bag can also happen in the back of our throat. And so that's the snorers that you hear. And so when you're having somebody who's snoring, and especially if you hear the burbling sounds or you hear the gasping that goes along with it, the likelihood is that they have some variety of sleep apnea, and their lack of oxygen to the body and the brain starts to drive up their blood pressure, starts to create some weight gain, is connected to diabetes and fatty liver. But a lot of times we don't recognize really early in the game that a lack of restorative sleep may, in fact, be apnea.
That's true. And apnea and its associated low blood oxygen really affects all the systems. It drives down your brain's ability to make the hormones that release the hormones, the hypothalamus and the pituitary, the master glands that control and orchestrate your adrenals and your thyroid and your sex hormones. It gets thrown off. The usual regulatory mechanisms are disturbed, and so you may actually have suppressed adrenal function, suppressed sex hormone function, suppressed thyroid function because of the sleep apnea and sleep deprivation. And so it begins to go from simply a deficit of adequate sleep into hormonal organ dysfunction, and then we start to get real fatigue.
Well, so we start with what's easy, get enough sleep. And some of you out there, especially those of you that have young children, might throw your head back and laugh because you haven't had a good night's sleep for 18 years. But what's happening is you're driving down the road somewhere in Sarasota and you see a sandwich board out there at the road and it says, have more energy, B12 shots here, $25. And so everybody that's feeling pooped, you know, squeals on their brakes and pulls into the parking lot and goes into that acupuncture office or chiropractic office or medical office, etc., to get their B12 shots because they feel like that's going to give them an energy boost. Is it?
Well, it can. B12 is an energy facilitator, absolutely, but it's not a cure for fatigue. We have to actually really think about intervening with simple chemicals like that with some caution, because really there are lots of reasons to have fatigue, and some of them are medical, some of them are simply like sleep deprivation or limited nutrition. And so we need to address those too. But yes, a B12 shot can give you a nice boost.
Well, and what we have to do is we have to look at all the B vitamins. You know, when we when B vitamins were discovered, they were numbered. B1, B2, B3, B5, B6, B9, B12, etc. B1, B2, and B3, thiamine, riboflavin, and niacin. These three compounds are critical to allow carbohydrates to be metabolized inside the cell. And so when we look at B-complex and people say, oh, B-complex gives me more energy, how does that work? Well, B1, B2, and B3, thiamine, riboflavin, and niacin, help your body to set fire to carbohydrates inside the cell so they can boost energy. The second thing that can happen is B5 and B6. B5 and B6 are friends of your adrenal glands. Your adrenal glands use a whole lot of vitamin B5 and a little bit of vitamin B6 in order to make a compound in your adrenals called coenzyme A. And this has a great deal to do with your ability to make the adrenal hormones of alertness. Things like adrenaline and cortisol are potentiated with B5 and B6. So we got a hit list now. B1, 2, and 3, B5, 6, and B12. So a B-plex kind of supplement can definitely make a huge big difference in terms of your energy, especially if it's taken at breakfast or breakfast and lunch.
That's really true. The addition of these vitamins really facilitates, again, that restorative ability, because when you're down and you're stressed and you have any kind of either physical, physiologic, mental stresses, these B vitamins facilitate better energy so you can actually catch up. So your energy expenditure isn't outstripping that restorative process. Because when you support the adrenals, when you support the metabolism of carbohydrates, you basically give yourself the ability to have more energy. If you have still interfering processes from a variety of different areas that still are draining you, at least you have a way to catch up. Things like infections. I had a friend actually call me this morning and tell me that they yesterday began to feel absolutely horrendous. They got hit with the Mack truck. Aches everywhere, fever, and dry cough.
Sounds like the flu to me.
And that's exactly what happened. And I said, well, why didn't you call me yesterday? And she said, well, my brain wasn't working. I said, that's true. The flu does that. The neurologic, immunologic, and endocrine systems are all tied together with the same signaling receptors, like little antennae, and the same signaling molecules. And so when you get the flu or any kind of illness, acute infectious illness, the chemicals that the immune system puts out to help you fight the flu actually interfere with brain function and actually make you feel fatigued, weak, even depressed. And so when you have a process like that going on, you need even more support. One of the things is sleep to help restore.
Well, people always want to bump back right away after they've had some sort of an infectious process. And it doesn't matter whether what the infectious process is, influenza being, of course, the most common one. But you know, people expect that their energy is just going to pop back up to normal, but they don't realize that just manufacturing those inordinate amount of white blood cells that you need, whether you cut your foot at the beach or whether you got the flu, that takes energy.
That's
right.
People
somehow think that the body just runs on automatic and it doesn't take extra energy to make extra white blood cells, but I'm here to tell you that it does. But, you know, one of the arguments that I've had with some individuals who are anti medicine overall. You know, the people that come in and say, I hate doctors, I hate medicine, I hate pharmaceuticals, you know, I don't, just give me an herb, whatever. And, you know, I ask to see their blood work. And they go, oh, I never get that done. You know, that doesn't have any value. But in fact, just 2 weeks ago, I had a client that had profound anemia. And her fatigue was nothing but her profound anemia. And it would have never been discovered easily had she not had conventional blood work. So we have to look at the fact that anemia does exist, low red blood cells, low hemoglobin, low hematocrit. In her case, she was a menstruating woman having heavy periods, and that was what was causing her anemia. She wasn't able to recover enough blood during the month in between these heavy cycles, and just treating her anemia made a difference in her vitality within 10 days.
Absolutely. Anemia is a critical thing to screen for when you have fatigue. There are certain medical conditions that without treatment, you're not going to resolve the fatigue and you may even die. And that anemia could have gotten worse to the point where she would have failed. And so iron is something that people could take in anemic or in fatigue states if they have anemia. It's not worth it if you don't have anemia because it's not going to bolster the system appropriately, but many other medical diagnoses can be involved. Cardiac diagnoses are really commonly associated with fatigue, especially heart failure. And when the heart pump isn't pumping well, you just don't get that vital energy getting to the peripheral tissues. The blood is carrying your life energy, the oxygen essentially that fires up the tissues. And if the circulation is not there, it's not going to get out to the periphery. You're not going to feel that energy that you need to feel. So treating an underlying medical condition like heart failure is another way of looking at all these medical conditions. Treating the underlying condition is really what to get to.
Well, and I get clients that come in and they say, it must be my thyroid.
Yes.
The reason that I'm tired is it must be my thyroid.
That is one of the most common complaints that I've got.
And you know, when I look in the blood work and the blood work says 0.45 to 4.5 is the normal range.
Right.
And, you know, they say, well, I had my blood tested. I had TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, which is actually your pituitary talking to your thyroid. You're not actually measuring your thyroid output when you measure the TSH. But, my doctor said it was WNL. It was within normal limits. And they come in and they've got a TSH of 4.1 and the range was up to 4.5. So, I'm okay. And yet they didn't test the thyroid hormones, T4 and T3, to actually find out how good the thyroid was manufacturing the hormones. And by golly, when she had those tested, they were basement numbers. So just because your TSH is between the rails on the test does not mean that your thyroid is optimized.
That's right. And there's a lot of talk these days about optimal hormone function as opposed to just organ failure. You know, 30 years ago, when I was beginning to study medicine, the approach to thyroid was, and many other conditions, including diabetes, was either you have it or you don't. So the person that we look at today, that even I evaluate regularly with the pre-diabetic metabolic syndrome state, was not even a consideration in the 70s or in the 80s.
It isn't even now. I mean, get so many people that come in and say, you're pre-diabetic, you're pre-hypertensive, you know, and I go, wait a minute. The nature of this pre is you're headed down the slippery slope. You've already bought a ticket. You just don't know where the gatehouse is yet. So this kind of warning zone of pre-diabetes and pre-hypertension, I think, do not give enough alert to the patient that they need to be taking action. It's kind of like, well, we're just going to let you keep eating bonbons every night. And then if your blood sugar gets high enough, then we'll give you a medication for diabetes. We're just going to let your blood pressure continue to rise. And then if it goes any higher, then we'll put you on a medication. As opposed to realizing that pre-diabetes and pre-hypertension just really don't exist. What exists is you're in trouble already. And if you keep going on the course that you're going on, fatigue is only going to be one part of your problems.
Right, and actually many people do show up in the general doctor's office with that complaint of fatigue, and if the blood sugar is 102 and the top normal is 99 and the hemoglobin A1C is 5.7 and the top normal is 5.6, the doctor quite often isn't that interested in those minor variations out of what's normal. But we know that if that person's fatigued, they're already having energy metabolism issues, and that is a perfect road sign. That tiny bit of glucose abnormality is a road sign that energy metabolism is off, and that we need to intervene right there, right then, address that problem, and try to correct the course so that we don't have that fatigue develop into a serious medical complication.
And so when we look at improving fatigue and we look at the really simple things like just getting enough sleep, you know, we have to look at the really simple thing like just getting enough fluid.
Yes.
Yesterday's paper in the parade section of yesterday's Sarasota Herald, which continues to get so thin that I can now read the New York Times through the Sarasota Herald, they had an article in there saying this 8x8 rule, 8 glasses of eight ounces of water 8 times a day, that it's debunked, that, you know, we don't really need that much water because there's water in our food and, you know, we're drinking other beverages. And boy, I'm here to stand on the opposite side of that statement, because I see people all the time that do not get enough water, and it's not fluid. I don't believe that those words are exchangeable, because your body digests other things as food. It gets used very differently from water. And I do bioelectric impedance analysis in my clinic, and I see individuals who in fact are dehydrated. Their cells don't have enough water. Well, remember what Mama told me back when I was a little kid out on the concrete patio with my record player. And she said, always have your shoes on when you play the record player, because if there was a short, you could get a shock. And I thought Mother was being overly cautious. And, you know, that concrete floor was often damp. And I do remember one day going out there. I know some of you really young people that are out there in the listening audience may not know about this antique thing called a record player. But as a little kid, we all had one. And I got that shock. Well, what's the purpose of the story? To remind you that water conducts electricity. Well, hello, how do we relate that to the body? If you don't have enough water inside the cell, your body can't generate its own electric potential. We have electricity in our body that helps to run the system. And so when you're dehydrated, just 2% dehydration. Now think of the math. If you're 150-pound person, 2% dehydration is 3 pounds. 3 pounds is a quart and a half of water. If you're down a quart and a half of water, that's all. That's not much. Then you're in a situation where your energy, and we can measure it, the strength of your muscles goes down 10%. So dehydrate 2%, your strength goes down 10%. If your strength goes down, you can equate that with fatigue.
The water issue is, I think that statement is a little bit crazy, considering what we know to be the majority diet in this country, which really doesn't include enough water-containing foods. Eating bread, pasta,
crackers, Doritos, pretzels,
cookies. It just doesn't cut it. Even though we eat some meat with it, that's mostly protein. There is water there, without a doubt. But unless you get super processed meat that's full of water, you're really eating more solids. And most people still today are not eating that 7 servings of fruits and vegetables, which do contain the extra, not free, but fluid water within their tissues. It's just still not enough.
I shoot for 9 to 12 servings of fruits and vegetables every day.
But even to get to 7.
You can't even get to 5. We don't even have 10% of America that gets 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day.
Right. So that statement's really wrong in our society. If we were eating those 7 to 12, it would be a different statement. But the other thing is, Western medicine doesn't look at minor chronic toxicity. The only thing that really is a problem is acute major toxicity. So
I've been poisoned.
I've been poisoned today. I drank a bottle of lead or something like that. But the little bits that are in our body all the time need to be washed out. The only way we can do that is with more and more fluids to keep using our kidneys and our liver as the filters and excretors that they are. I mean, the total blood volume goes through the kidneys every minute. So to be able to really fully utilize them, we have to have lots of fluid in the blood to get the filter working.
Well, and when we talk about getting those toxins out, you know, I'm a big sulfur hustler. You know, I'm always wanting people to eat those high sulfur foods like eggs and asparagus and onions and garlic and broccoli and cabbage and Brussels sprouts, because fat is antagonistic to sulfur. And so when people eat these really high fat meals and they eat, you know, double cheeseburgers with a side of fries, what we end up with is a situation where those fats act antagonistically towards sulfur. And if we don't have enough sulfur, we can't get those toxins out of the body.
That's right.
So when we look at simple things, enough sleep, enough water. It's not just a matter of taking your B complex. It's not just a matter of getting something to jumpstart the engines. You know, we did a whole, I did a whole show on caffeine here a couple of weeks ago. It'll be posted on the website, eatplus.com, real soon. But, you know, I'm all the time seeing individuals that are grabbing something out of the checkout line that's got the word energy in it. And so what remedies can we actually use that can boost energy? I'll tell you, one of the first ones that I want to grab is licorice.
Mm-hmm. Licorice is a wonderful support for the adrenal glands. It is really helpful in maintaining blood pressure. In fact, people who have blood pressure problems shouldn't take much of it because it may increase your blood pressure. It's
well,
that effective.
Unless it's DGL, deglycerized licorice. DGL is what you want to have in front of the word licorice if you are a hypertensive person. But otherwise, you know, the licorice that they sell, you know, the red Twizzlers that they sell.
That's not licorice.
That's not licorice. What we're talking about is the European black licorice, or licorice as a tincture or as a pill. That is definitely something that helps to boost the function of the adrenal glands, as does ginseng. You know, ginseng for ages has had a reputation as a natural energy booster. And there's good evidence that ginseng's claim to fight fatigue may really be well deserved. There's some small independent studies where they found that ginseng extracts can combat fatigue, even fatigue from chemotherapy. So, you know, when the fatigue is just to the point that it's paralyzing for some patients, there's few options for alleviating it. Simple ginseng tinctures may be able to change it. And I think the Chinese have known this for about 7,000 years. So I'm going to put ginseng and licorice right up there on the top of my list of things that people can use short term for fatigue, as opposed to using caffeine and guarana. Guarana, one of the herbs that's used in a lot of those energy drinks, will very easily provoke diarrhea. So you will have a lot of energy to get to the bathroom.
And it's basically a caffeine stimulant anyway.
That's true.
The do you have a recommendation on which of the ginsengs you prefer?
Well, I use both ginsengs, the American and the Korean ginseng. I actually like the American ginseng better. So you've got Panax and Eleutherococcus. Those are the Latin names of ginseng. And both of them have supportive effects on the adrenal glands. They are both considered adaptogens, meaning that if your adrenals are firing too high, they help to calm it down. And if your adrenals are firing too low, they help to boost it up. So I actually work on both families of ginseng, but with my preference being American ginseng.
Another thing that helps to boost the energy is amino acids. Amino acids are the precursors for your neurotransmitters and your hormones.
And happily, all last week, we did a virtual whole show on the use of tyrosine in order to boost those foundational nutrients that are necessary to make our molecules of alertness.
And one to add to that might be DL-phenylalanine, which also supports the same system, a little different way, but is very stimulating and can be used with the tyrosine.
Well, and DLPA, You know, I'm still waiting for the client who can say phenylalanine, but DLPA, both the D side and the L side of the molecule phenylalanine are energizers, and they also help to boost what are called enkephalins. Enkephalins are part of the family of endorphins, and you've heard of endorphins as one of the feel-good chemicals in your body. Well, enkephalins are one of the things that help you tolerate the pain of life. And so DLPA contains both sides of that phenylalanine molecule, because all molecules have a left side and a right side. And it will boost those enkephalins. So people that have chronic pain, it will also help them tolerate pain better.
It's interesting with this DL-phenylalanine that the D side actually has some effect. We don't seem to see a lot of effect, or we haven't documented it with most of the D amino acids, but the Ls seem to be what are incorporated into our proteins, etc. But the D version of this DL-phenylalanine really does reduce pain, and that's very important because chronic pain is one of the major players in chronic fatigue. And actually, I'd like to differentiate not chronic fatigue syndrome, but just fatigue that comes on and you have a day of fatigue, maybe from sleep deprivation, to chronic fatigue, where you have ongoing fatigue for days and days and days. And this is what actually needs to be addressed. But the pain perception and the perception of fatigue can be altered by that amino acid D-phenylalanine. So it's a very useful adjunct for fatigue and for pain control.
Well, and let's look at aromatherapy. You know, aromatherapy is a real quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
And as aromatherapy has gotten more popularized, there are products out there that have words that are about alertness and, you know, reducing stress and helping sleep and all sorts of various triggering agents, because our limbic system, our emotional system in our brain, is very much tied to sense. You know, when we smell that turkey cooking in the oven, when we smell that pumpkin pie, floods of memories, you know, can come to our mind. So
I'm smelling that blue spruce that's sitting in my living room, and it's a wonderful feeling up from that.
So the nature of our olfactory nerve, of those 12 cranial nerves, the only nerve that actually goes out and touches the world is our olfactory nerve, our smell nerve. And now, no, I'm not saying old factory. I'm saying olfactory nerve, because when we smell things like peppermint is one of the awakening smells. And so you may be able to get a peppermint mist, or get peppermint oil, pure essential peppermint oil, not peppermint fragrance. Remember, a lot of things that have the word fragrance in the label contain toxic chemicals. So when we use peppermint spray or peppermint smells, they are definitely one of the ones that benefit us. And no, I'm not just talking about candy canes. So think about aromatherapy. It's something that you could carry in your pocket or purse, or leave in your, you know, console of your car and take a sniff. And also just take a drop and put it on your upper lip under your nose and smell that peppermint. It is very enlivening to the brain. There are other aromatherapy scents that are also enlivening to the brain. I think about clary sage is one of the things
that really makes
a difference. And lots of combinations. This isn't a whole show on aromatherapy. Perhaps we'll do one at one point. But it's easy to remember peppermint because of candy canes at this time of the year. Unfortunately, that isn't the true peppermint oil that's in the candy cane. And putting a candy cane under your nose may cause some comments from your friends and family.
It would be rather interesting looking, but I think we might want to avoid the red dye number 3 that's also striping the little cane there.
Really. So there are lots of little things that you can use. And for those of you that are into Bach remedies, B-A-C-H, Dr. Edward Bach developed Bach remedies back in the 1930s. Some of you may have heard of Rescue Remedy that was developed by Dr. Bach in England, known as Dr. Bach. But in the collection of Bach remedies, things like olive and hornbeam and wild rose and gentian are all things that are used to combat inordinate fatigue when life just gets too hard.
And another one of those things that's actually another supplement, one of my favorites for energy boosting, is coenzyme Q10. CoQ10 is the facilitator for the movement of energy through the mitochondria, the energy factory within each cell. And coenzyme Q10 facilitates that. It actually has been shown to improve heart failure by helping the heart muscle actually move the energy through it and pump better. I've seen it help me with alertness. It's really very potent, I think, for activating your ability to think more clearly.
Well, I take coenzyme Q10 every morning, and I had a client that came in last week, and she had a coenzyme Q10 that was powdered, and it was inside of a capsule where you could see it, and I explained to her that the powdered form of coenzyme Q10 has about one-third of the potency of the gel cap of coenzyme Q10. So if you're going to go out and buy CoQ10, make sure you do not buy the dry powdered form, because otherwise you're going to need 300 milligrams in order to get the benefit that you'd get out of 100 milligrams of the gel cap form of coenzyme Q10.
That's true. And there are tablets out there as well. So, and actually, there is a lot of hype in the media about the new CoQ10, ubiquinol. And frankly, most of the clinical data on efficacy and conditions is from the original CoQ10, ubiquinone. So it's probably not worth spending the money on the newfangled version, ubiquinol, because we get the same bang for less buck out of ubiquinone.
You know, that's the place where I get crazy, when I read that bad science.
Yes.
You know, when people try to hustle a unique compound and there just aren't the studies to support it. I had somebody bring in a product to me. It's one of the new multi-level companies that's selling the $70 bottle of, you know, fixes anything.
Right.
You know, no matter what is the matter with you, if you take this, it's going to make you better. And when I looked up the ingredients, and of course, it's a proprietary formula, which means that they don't tell you how many milligrams of each of the ingredients are in there, because it's a secret.
Right.
You know, you don't want anybody to know. But the total volume of support that was in this formula is very naive. Essentially, they're buying a $10 bottle of nutrients for $70.
Yes, with lots of hype and marketing.
Right, and that's what happened with this ubiquinone, ubiquinol story. You know, the ubiquinol, ubiquinone story that's been blasted by a bunch of healthy lecturers who happen to be selling
ubiquinol.
Ubiquinol are individuals that are giving way more hype than the studies deserve. And so, you know, I always have to be careful when people say, oh, well, we've got a study. And then I'm going to say, well, where was that published? What journal, what respected medical journal was that published in? And what was your N? How big was the group you studied? You know, I had a representative of one of the supplement companies that came into my office, and she had the audacity to present this information on a study. And I listened to the whole thing, and what happened is that I got to the end of it and found out there were 9 people in the study.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her not to come to my office anymore, because that was just absolutely ridiculous, and the study was unpublished. So,
yes.
You know, when people make these claims that this is going to solve your energy problem, find out where did that study come from? And who did it?
There is something that has been studied extensively and has been shown to dispel energy problems, and that is exercise. Getting out and walking 30 minutes a day really does change the equation. It puts depression to bed and helps people feel better about themselves, about their energy levels, and it really is an effective therapy, essentially, for many of the symptoms that would be called even depression. Because depression is rare in and of itself as an intrinsic condition of a human being. Depression, like fatigue, is a result of many different endocrinologic, infectious, metabolic, cardiac, pulmonary things, medications even antidepressants can cause you to feel fatigued. So as you're treating your fatigue from your quotes depression, you may actually be making it worse with the medication. Chemotherapy definitely has been associated, radiation therapy, but those things metabolically drop your energy. So taking something like CoQ10 could actually really help facilitate you even getting out of the house and doing the exercise to bring up your mood and your energy.
Well, Dr. Harvey, we've given them a lot of ideas and a lot of information, and we're hoping that what's going to happen as a result is you're going to have less fatigue.